Chapter 23, Beginning of Rasa Pastimes. At the beginning of the Rasa dance, I am making this prayer in revealing Krishna's promise that he would enjoy with the gopis in the night. Out of rashness, I have written that my poetry is filled with rasa. I am speaking here a subject which is most confidential. I should offer the exchange of words between Krishna and the gopis while they were alone in Braj to the ear of the qualified person who will hold these words in his heart but will not speak this in an assembly. When the evening recitation to the Sakis continued as arranged, Madhukanta spoke with a sweet voice to Snigdhakanta. Folding his hands, he said, "Please speak in detail about the unfolding of the rasa pastimes. The scope of a particular situation is determined by its particular cause." Hearing this and having seen everything, all present said with bliss, "What he said is right. If the stream of rasa is interrupted, one cannot obtain the real nature of the rasa, since there is no relation between previous and later events. Therefore, please begin to speak without interruption of the topic according to your desire." Madhukanta said, "When the festival of the rasa sought to make its appearance, the moon-faced women became enchanted on seeing his face. Their doe eyes began to roll on seeing his eyes, and the self-control of those beautiful-bodied women disappeared on seeing his body. When the festival of rasa sought to make its appearance, Krishna's eyes developed greed for the lotus eyes of the women, who surpassed Lakshmi in beauty, and his beauty gave joy by its profuse radiance at this first meeting. By the efforts of Purnamasi, the Pulinda women became successful by touching the kumkum that had fallen from Krishna's feet, which had touched Radha's breasts. After this had occurred, Krishna, thinking himself incomplete, developed thirst for attracting only Radha. He thought, "How can I meet her alone?" One Sakhi anointed with Radha's kumkum spoke to Krishna, whose eyes were like pink lotuses, out of compassion for Radha. "May you defeat Cupid. I do not know why you desiccate and pierce Radha as if she were your flute." At that moment, the forest deities announced a message from the sky. "Your dear flute, which is first dried out and then pierced by a forged metal spike to make its holes, is known as Cupid, O killer of Bakit. That Cupid is now drying up Radha's body with the fire of separation because of her affection for you." Then Krishna, wandering about unsteadily, saw a message written using kumkum on a tamal leaf. "I am burning because of Cupid's fire, and my mind is preoccupied with your beautiful limbs. Hearing the sweet ragas from your flute, I constantly see your black effulgence everywhere. I have become Krishnized, but have not attained you." Seeing the letter without the writer, Krishna thought, "Ah, is it possible that Radha has written this extraordinarily poetic letter with such content? Since she comes from a very good family, she would conceal agitation caused by love. Only my flute, my refuge, can destroy the coverings which hide the desire within her." Pained by not attaining the nectar of Radha, he began to play his flute incessantly. The monsoon season, when the attraction arose, passed, and half of the autumn passed with increased desire for her. He played his flute only for her. When he played his flute to attract her, she developed symptoms of love. First she began trembling, then her mind whirled about, and then she gave up sitting. She would leave the house several times and walk on the forest path, going far away on the road. The playing of the flute to attract Radha was laden with desire, but fully sincere. Lowering my shoulders, with hair standing on end, loudly I proclaim, "Praise to Radha, who fulfilled Krishna's desire at all times." having desired to test the flute playing in the monsoon period, observing the time, he then saw that autumn had come. Seeing this, he began thinking, "If Radha, by nature flawless, becomes the ornament of my pastimes, I can attain all women and can become completely happy. But I see that Radha, according to the time, is controlling her love, which conquers all people. Radha sees that I am doing the same. Since absorbed in playing the flute, I can produce love transformation in others, I know that I can also produce great disturbance in Radha's body." While thinking in this way, he saw in front of him an auspicious sign. He said, "Ah, something auspicious is about to happen. The Creator has shown to me Kanjana birds dancing on a lotus. I infer that I will soon see Radha's face with two beautiful eyes. Because of seeing that auspicious sign from the full moon of Ashvin month to the 14th day of the waxing moon, he played his flute continually. Noting the nights with jasmines blossoming in the autumn season, along with the sweet sound of the flute, he began to play constantly with the gopis for enjoyment. The full moon, filled with various pastimes, quickly arrived to please its guest Krishna. Knowing that the time which assisted the rasa dance had arrived, during the day after herding the cows, he returned to Braj with the cows. After finishing his meals there, in the evening he went to his room and sat there. He saw the sun set and the moon surrounded by its rays and stars rise. Absorbed in special emotions under that influence, he thought as follows, "Is this the moon's form, like a ball of kumkum rising, or the face of Cupid red with anger? Is this the moon spread with kumkum ointment appearing in front of me, or does the face of Radha rise from the forest on the bank of the Yamuna in front of me? If this is the moon, then one should think as follows. The full moon has reddened the east with its kumkum-laden hand, and on that pretext is instructing me in my Kaishora age to immediately enjoy with the dear women. This pure moon has produced auspiciousness in all ways. It is certain that the moon is giving an instruction. I am the moon, enjoying with the wives of the protectors of the directions, spreading redness everywhere. I give joy to all people. In doing so, no one hates me. O Krishna, why are you hesitating to enjoy with Radha? Inspired by these heavenly signs, I will attain auspiciousness by going in the southeastern direction, made white by the intense moonlight. This is because the moon reveals that the whole forest is tinted red in all directions. This is an auspicious omen for me. I will obtain auspiciousness by going there. If this is the face of angry Cupid, he will use his arrows and destroy fear. If this forest is the abode of the East Beauty, then by going in that direction, happiness will enter me. On going in that direction, my right eye trembles. Therefore, at that place, I will meet and dance with the women. Thinking in this way, he met Dama, Sudama, Vasudama, and Kinkani, being pleased with their precious affection. He secretly assigned them as guards at his door to prevent others entering while he was sleeping in his room. He then left them, holding his flute in his hands, went in the southeastern direction, and arrived at the bank of the Yamuna. He then considered, "This is not angry Cupid's face, since the place is white. This is not Radha's face in separation, for that face would be faulty, whereas this place is pure." He then decided that it was actually the moon. He thought, "The moon arising in the east to dispel the deep darkness of the night has made everything perfect for a festival. The moon is imitating Radha's face. How could the moon alone disturb my heart?" Thinking again, he spoke to the moon, "O moon with sweet light, you should not proudly think that you are unequaled in beauty among all beings, because even the 10 toenails of Radha have your beauty. Thinking in this way, selecting a suitable spot, he assigned the four friends on the path of the distance and ascending to a higher area on the bank of the Yamuna. Facing Braj, he placed the flute in his mouth to play it. He then thought, "First, I will make Radha come. Without her, the result will be useless. By the thrill of her coming, the coming of other women will bring extra pleasure to my mind. How to make her come should be understood. Yes, yes, I know. I will employ my flute like persons skillful at shooting arrows, so that she alone and not others will be attracted by the sound." Contemplating this way, and then deciding, he then decided how to play the flute. At this time, the women, seeing the moon with its brilliant light, considered it suitable. "Ah, the moon, the lord of medicinal herbs, desires to afflict us mentally right now, and does not want to cure our malady." Noticing a slight difference in the moon, Vrinda began to think, "Ah, as smoke darkens a mirror, the moon has become dark and contaminated by the gopis' tears of separation from Krishna." The moon, brought under control by the continued presence of the doe-eyed women, manifested the form of Krishna with bliss through its pervasive rays. On seeing Krishna, they became filled with agitation. The autumn moon made the women depart for Krishna. The sound of the flute quickly made their arrival certain. On his flute, which produced sweetness, Krishna played various ragas filled with words because of his attraction to the gopis. His anuraga is described. Suffering because of separation from Radha, Krishna sang a pleasant tune on his flute. While tears filled his eyes, his hair stood on end, and his body trembled. The melodic raga which he played, which had never been tasted on earth previously, with its sweet raginis, reddened the hearts of his beloveds. The words within the melody, filled with sonority, are described. "O Radha, whose face is sweet as the moon, O Madhavi creeper of the spring endowed with Madhura Bhav, O lover merciful to me, for a long time your qualities have been piercing my heart." Understanding that he had pierced the mind of Radha, Krishna, most intelligent and skillful at playing the flute, called the other gopis in the same way. He called them with these words, "Ah, daughters of cowards, take up the sugar of my words and fulfill your desires. I am ashamed that I have conquered you, my beloveds. Please manifest some sweet mercy." When he played his flute, the sound approached their ears and made their pleasing attraction firm. When he hindered them, they overcame the obstacles. Though they displayed unsteadiness, they finally arrived. They had prayed to come to him and did not accept anything else. Forgetting what to do, they opened their eyes wide with astonishment on hearing his flute. They went towards Krishna, who could now be seen, who was the Lord of their lives, making a wave because of their tears. The Lord of Joy gave joy in 100 ways to the lotus-eyed women of Gokula who held lotuses in their hands. Some women, obstructed by their husbands, remained in their houses serving their husbands. It is explained by Shukadeva that they attained Krishna in their homes. Snigdhakanta began to think. In the Uttarakhanda of the Padma Purana, it is described that when Ram went to the Dandakaranya forest, the sages there, attracted to Ram, desired to enjoy with him. They attained the bodies of the women in Gokula as sadhakas. These were the women who were obstructed by their husbands. They did not attain the same perfection as Krishna's dear and attractive eternal associates, such as Radha. On attaining similarity, they attained Krishna. This is how it is explained. Although Lord Krishna is the Supreme Soul, these girls simply thought of him as their male lover and associated with him in that intimate mood. Thus their karmic bondage was nullified, and they abandoned their gross material bodies. The logic is now explained. It is also said in the Padma Purana, All the sages attained bodies of women and appeared in Gokula. On attaining the Lord by prema, they were liberated from the ocean of material existence. However, it is also said, the coward men, bewildered by Krishna's illusory potency, thought their wives had remained home at their sides. Thus, they did not harbor any jealous feelings against him. Thus, it was impossible for their husbands to understand what had happened to them. It is said that Putana, though desiring to kill Krishna, attained the spiritual world because she offered her breast to him. This is similar to those Sadaka gopis who attained him by thinking of him as their lover. The word api is used to indicate their inferior position as sadhakas, but the result was attainment of the highest position. This is apt because it is said, Krishna was the supreme soul for the gopis, not another human male. Thus they did not commit adultery by contact with him. Though Krishna is famous as an illicit lover, he became their husband when they gave up those bodies related to their husbands. Though Putana wanted to kill Krishna by offering him milk, she thought of him as her child and was given the position as a nurse. By this logic, it is reasonable that those gopis became his wives. This point is explained to you previously. Since even Shishupal, who hated Krishna, achieved perfection, then what to speak of the Lord's dear devotees? Following from this example, because of their prema, the gopis attained much greater positions. In the pastimes on earth, one sees that the Nichisita gopis thought of Krishna as their paramour, not a husband. But this statement does not praise illicit love. One should not praise the illicit mood that arises in Radha and other eternal associates for Krishna. One should praise the eternal anurag, since by this eternal anurag, these women overcame their concept of illicit love and attained Krishna, their eternal lover. That eternal anurag waits for the bodies of the eternal associates, just as it waits for the women locked in their houses. Thinking thus, Snigdhakanta then said aloud, "What happened next?" Madhukanta said, "The women who came to meet him are described as follows. After the women heard the sound of the flute, their bodies began to swell. Should not the flute, which increased their desire, increase the women by the power of its sound? They gave up their huge houses and overcame the unsurpassable strong obstacles caused by their elders. They all offered their wealth of their very selves to one master. Coming in groups, they desired to satisfy unlimited devotees. They had round, fine ear ornaments in their hair like duckweed. The flowers which fell were like circles of white foam. Their eyes seemed to leap about in the tears flowing over their bodies. They moved forward, thinking only of the remaining path to be covered. They had fine lotus hands on slightly moving stalks of their arms. They were like painted houses with flawless young tortoise backs. As breasts, they walked slowly with hips shaking with excitement. Their thighs were like banana tree trunks. With the bells on their belts proudly jingling, they were like a group of swans chortling. They appeared to dance as their limbs swiftly rolled about. They became completely paralyzed with the appearance of intense sattvika bhavas. Because of the waves of unsteadiness afflicting their limbs, they swiftly put those ornaments and clothes on the wrong parts of their bodies. For this reason, also, they could not remain in a group with their friends and forgot their names and forms. As various rivers converge in the dark, beautiful ocean endowed with waves, the women from various houses came quickly towards Madhava with his trembling limbs. They saw Krishna, Cupid personified, at a place with attractive groves, which was permeated with the beauty of the Yamuna, served by the cuckoos, bees, flowers, and fragrant breezes, which was glorious in the moonlight, endowed with all qualities and decorated with gems. Arriving at the jeweled area, they saw the spiritual Cupid endowed with limbs, playing his flute full of attractive sounds, whose complexion was like a fresh monsoon cloud, was decorated with yellow lightning as cloth and radiated the luster of his jeweled ornaments. Surrounding him on all sides, the golden gopis desired to take support from him, like golden creepers supported by a tamal tree. Inviting them with his flute, his assigned messenger, calling them by means of its friends, streams of perfume, he lured them on a long path with devotion. When they came close, they tasted the nectar of his beauty, but they were not satisfied and could not stop giving them the nectar. These women with long eyes, new youth, wearing white cloth and decorated with sandalwood, made Krishna thirsty like a jatkara bird. With great longing, Krishna began to think, "How astonishing! They are the complete treasure of new youth whose beauty is the fresh commodity that I must purchase. The crest jewels of Lakshmis in the three worlds, the life-saving medicine for awakening love, the moon's new phases for my lotus eyes. The arrow of Krishna's glances will pierce my arrow glance. Piercing my mind, they will enter my heart." All the gopis became aware of Krishna in this way. As bees enjoy the creepers for a short time and, wandering about, land on the lotus and remain there, the eyes of Krishna gaze at the gopis two or three at a time and finally, wandering about in a remarkable way, landed upon Radha. When his glance remained there, without moving, he thought, "Radha is the beauty among all types of beauty, the supreme Lakshmi among all Lakshmis. The power of seeing for my eyes, for not seeing her, my eyes are blind." When this happened, Radha's gaze became fixed on him and she began trembling, being controlled by the spread of awakening rasa. Agitated, she appeared most beautiful, endowed with greed and sighted by him. There is a verse with questions and answers. Whose eyes can be compared to Radha's eyes, which became filled with tears on seeing his moon face? Can the lotus, blooming in autumn and exuding streams of nectar, equal her eye? When the women came before him and gave up all shame and madness induced by the faultless skill of the flute, they remained attractive with humility since they came from good families, and then they remained silent. When he sat among the special women, he saw that these women endowed with rare fragrance had made the journey because of intoxication from the sweet song of his flute. Smiling, he decided to agitate them. Understanding the nature of illicit love, he began to agitate them in order to taste the nectar of fully expressed love from their mouths and in order to produce greater longing in them by words, expressing evident indifference within, which was a request for an expression of their internal condition. "O fortunate women, your coming is auspicious for me, thus coming here is not in vain. Thus I am inquiring. Since they came with so much difficulty and remained reserved," he again asked, "What do you want?" He revealed respect for them and indifference. They could not understand his intention by simultaneous respect and indifference. They could say nothing. Thus he again spoke jokingly. "When I ask in front of you, you reply with silence. Can I understand that everything is well for the people in your houses in Braj?" When they smiled and looked at each other, he again spoke to them. "I cannot understand your bad intentions. Give up your reservations and speak in this place." Seeing again their great hesitation, he spoke further, using a special method with double meaning. "If there is no misfortune in Braj, then say why you have come. I cannot understand on my own. Having unsteady minds, you should go to Braj. You should not enter the woods. The forest is terrifying. The night is also frightening. At night, the forest is filled with ferocious animals. Nod home can also mean, do not leave here. He created a special means in order to make puns. You should not show an independent nature, since you have mothers, fathers, brothers, and sisters, and also husbands." Again, he spoke with a smile. "I also hear that you have children." The speaker then contemplated according to the conclusions which arose in the conversation between Vrinda and Purnamasi. To perform his pastimes, the Lord took advantage of all those moonlit autumn nights which inspire poetic descriptions of transcendental affairs. He laughed because there would be distaste, since their bodies would become disfigured by the birth of sons. Thinking thus, he thought, I will reveal this by my learning. Then he expressed himself more clearly. Krishna, the crest jewel of Rasikas, playing his flute to enjoy with the gopis, thought of the real meaning. They, from their very birth, thought of me as their husband, and therefore their awareness of having another husband depends only on material perception. Their vow to associate with me alone supersedes any unnatural association with others, since they cannot manifest a relationship of real love with anyone else. These women, who actually did not give birth to sons, respecting their husbands, only acted as if they had sons. But the identity of having maternal affection for those children next to them is only external conduct. He concluded this from authoritative sources. Thus he mocked their actions related to their husbands and sons, acting as if blind to the gopis' real identity and considering their fear from the friends searching for them. He then spoke with anger. Why do you make them fearful? But another meaning is, why are you afraid of them? The verse can be explained by taking the statements to indicate unmarried or appearing to be married. He then spoke of the unmarried women up to the word sahaja in verse 57 and those who were apparently married in verse 58 when he mentions sons. He speaks to all of them as if the statements are taken together. He then made their hearts shake by using suggestive meanings. This forest you see is worshipped by remarkable flowers in the autumn season, lit by the rays of the moon and dances in the wind from the Yamuna. All of these ingredients appear by the will of destiny when I desire to play, but you should not stay here since you have not come to play. Though you do not want to go, please return to your families and protect your dharma. Observing devotion to husbands and affection for children is prescribed in the scriptures. Rejecting dharma, which is hard to perform, enter my place of recreation, which yields the result of all dharma. If you do not, the forest resplendent with moonlight will produce pain for you. This was the actual meaning of what he said. Reflecting, he then said, Ah, I did not know. I was previously speaking nonsense. Please consider this and forgive me. It is proper that you came out of pain arising for desire for love pastimes because now I have developed affection. But I do not have as much affection in meeting as I do in separation. Therefore, you should go to your houses. It is not proper that you remain far from your object of affection. This opposite meaning should be understood. For a long time, their desire had become focused on him. By the sound of his flute, the desire increased greatly. Then it was abruptly broken. Hearing these unpleasant words from their beloved, they could not determine what to do. Should we live or die? The groups of motionless women in their belts became completely silent because of the pain. Filled with pain because of rejection by their beloved, their hearts shed constant tears as lotuses flow with sap. They began to consider what to do. We will give up our lives. We will fall at his feet. We will become angry at him. We will return to our houses. We will enter the Yamuna. Striking our foreheads, we will crowd around that hard-hearted person who has come here. When Krishna showed indifference, they shook their heads, tears flowed from their eyes, and their hearts quivered violently. All their limbs faltered. In this way, they underwent transformations. They hid these symptoms in order to prevent them. That pleasantness of his face protected them. At that moment, Krishna came to those women with their moon-like faces downcast, appearing like the full moon in the dark night of the blackness of their eye ointment, and their tears mixed with the red kumkum on their breasts. They became slightly angry. With beautiful lips torn by their harsh breathing, they scratch the earth with their toenails. With arched brows, they pierce their lover through arrow tips of their glances. Agitated in this way, spontaneously from their hearts there rose sweet sounds expressing their love, like red seeds bursting from a ripe pomegranate. They spoke ambiguous words mixed with cleverness, like the words of their lover. Even now people sing this song. Do not excessively quarrel like that person. Like Narayan, accept the devotees and reject the non-devotees without protest. Serving husbands and children is the special dharma for women. If you think in this way, let that be. But that is external. We consider ourselves the best. These two verses are puns called Artha Shlesha. The alternative meaning will be described. The happiness arising in the hearts of the devotees because of you is greater than the happiness arising from wife and sons. But unfortunately, youthful people do not desire to follow you. That is, youthful people should not follow you. The words nahi, expressing a miserable condition, can be taken to modify ja, or the words can also be used as forbiddance. O Lord, you always bestow the best indestructible boons. You fulfill aspirations. You do not fulfill aspirations. By fueling hopes, youths become happy. You do not bestow misfortune. Our hearts are happily engaged in household chores. Do not bind up our hearts. Our feet move with force from here and return home. You cannot stop us. That is, full of happiness, you should not unbind us engaged in household chores. Binding our hearts forcibly, we cannot move from here or return to our homes. Sukha tanu can modify chitam or bhavata. The word apina dharam can mean bound or unbound. Nacha can be an expression of a pitiful state or a negative. Kila means certainly or untrue. Attractor of friends, if you do not destroy the pain you cause through the flow of rasa from your sweet lips, you will meet with people like us. That is, having not destroyed yet the pangs of Cupid caused by the flow of rasa from your sweet lips, you should now meet with us. The word Svabhava means Cupid, and arising from him, Madhursha, means like us or for us. Your feet, which give joy to Lakshmi, bestowed the highest auspiciousness upon the Pulinda women. As long as they are touched and seen, they act against all material existence. That is, your feet, which give joy to Lakshmi, degrade a person to the level of a Pulinda woman. As long as they are touched and seen, they give disturbance to the whole world. The word apasavyam means unfavorable or disturbing. This can be taken either positively or negatively. Pulinda bhavyam can mean attaining a low position. Lakshmi, who appears in Braj and its Tulasi forest when you make your appearance, is visible now. Though she is most loyal to her husband, she desires the dust from your feet. Though sight of her gives joy to groups of followers, we bind fervently that desire for your foot dust in our hearts. Unfortunately, we have also desired that dust. The word api indicates all, or can indicate forbiddance. O destroyer of all suffering, be merciful to us. Those who are attracted to your feet forget themselves completely because of your smiling glance. Make us your devotees. This verse is suitable for both moods. O Krishna, with your face surrounded by locks of hair, joyful with earrings. O Krishna, with eyes decorated with a smile. O Krishna, with arms that give fearlessness. O Krishna, with a golden line on your chest. At this place, we become your servants. That is, we are forced to be your servants. The word api, as before, indicates forbiddance. O Lord, since even the trees have hairs standing on end on experiencing the sound of your flute and the power of your beauty, then what woman would not? That is, since the trees have hairs standing on end on experiencing the sound of your flute and the power of your beauty, why should women do this? Ka indicates komutya, or forbiddance. O Lord, you remove all fear and braj through your pastimes. This is evident everywhere. You have some incontestable power. Just once put your arm on the heads of us, your servants. No can mean na, that do not put your arms on our heads. When this happened, Krishna suffered from the arrows of her fickle glances and fired by her bow-like brows. This was not the pain of lamentation. Strong Krishna, with joyful face, though pained in his heart, revealed his secret out of compassion mixed with his generous intentions and brought the gopis to his side by force for pastimes. As a man is not satisfied on attaining treasure, the gopis were not satisfied on touching his hand, fingers, arms, forearms, and upper arms. Among the unlimited gopis who hid themselves from him, Krishna saw Radha clearly, like the moon amongst the stars. When Radha touched his hand, she caused astonishment in all the gopis, just as the slender moon causes astonishment in the stars. As a Vyabhachari Bhava becomes a Stai Bhava, and the Stai Bhava becomes a Vyabhachari Bhava, and as one attains one's desires from previous births by pious acts, so the gopis embrace Krishna and Krishna embrace Radha and attain joy with joking. One gopi looked on as if afraid. The others, holding garlands and joking among themselves, addressed her. Lightning appears beautiful in the lap of the clouds. The hearts of the timid become frightened. O friend, why are you laughing? Are you not seeing something astonishing in front of you? Ah, Krishna, full of bliss, by whose fragrance the Atmaramas cover up the bliss of Brahman, made efforts to play with all the gopis for his own pleasure. The conclusion. O Radha, he who is endowed with all qualities examines the faces of the other gopis in order to taste your excellence.